Chapter 7 Exploration.
So this launch group was slow getting back to their barracks.
There is a 21-minute discrepancy.
Is that a lot? I didn't even know this sort of thing was tracked.
For safety, and to have an idea in the event of emergency where everyone is. Tracking the uniforms that departed from the mess hall and the uniforms that entered the barracks, we come up with an aggregate of 21 minutes. That could be 21 children loitering for exactly 1 minute, or one child for 21 minutes.
That's very helpful. Am I supposed to ask them?
No, they aren't supposed to know that we track them by their uniforms. It isn't good for them to know how much we know about them.
And how little.
Little?
If it was one student, it wouldn't be good for him to know that our tracking methods don't tell us who it was.
Oh, good point. And actually, I came to you because I believe that it was one student only.
Even though your data aren't clear?
Because of the arrival pattern, spaced out in groups of two or three, a few solos, just the way they left the mess hall. A little bit of clumping, three solos become a threesome, two twos arrive as four. But if there had been some kind of major distraction in the corridor, it would have caused major coalescing, a much larger group arriving at once after the disturbance ended.
So, one student with 21 minutes unaccounted for.
I thought you should at least be aware.
What would he do with 21 minutes?
You know who it was?
I will. Soon enough. Are the toilets tracked? Are we sure it wasn't somebody so nervous he went in to throw up his lunch?
Toilet entry and exit patterns were normal. In and out.
Yes. I'll find out who it was. And keep watching the data for this launch group.
So I was right to bring this to your attention?
Did you have any doubt of it?
Bean slept lightly, listening as he always did, waking twice that he remembered. He didn't get up, just lay there listening to the breathing of the others. Both times there was a little whispering somewhere in the room. Always children's voices, no urgency about them, but the sound was enough to rouse Bean and kindle his attention, just for a moment till he was sure there was no danger. He woke the third time when Dymac entered the room. Even before sitting up, Bean knew that's who it was, from the weight of his step, the sureness of his movement, the press of authority. Bean's eyes were open before Dymac spoke. He was on all fours, ready to move in any direction before Dymac finished his first sentence. Nap time is over, boys and girls. Time for work. It was not about Bean. If Dymac knew what Bean had done after lunch and before their nap, he gave no sign. No immediate danger. Bean sat on his bunk as Dymac instructed them in the use of their lockers and desks. Palm the wall beside the locker and it opens. Then turn on the desk and enter your name and a password. Bean immediately palmed his own locker with his right hand, but did not palm the desk. Instead, he checked on Dymac, busy helping another student near the door, then scrambled to the unoccupied third bunk above his own and palmed that locker with his left hand. There was a desk inside that one, too. Quickly, he turned on his own desk and typed in his name and a password. Bean. A shield. Then he pulled out the other desk and turned it on. Name? Poke. Password? Carlotta. He slipped the second desk back into the locker and closed the door, then tossed his first desk down onto his own bunk and slipped down after it. He did not look around to see if anyone noticed him. If they did, they'd say something soon enough. Visibly checking around would merely call attention to him and make people suspect him who would not otherwise have noticed what he did. Of course, the adults would know what he had done. In fact, Dymac was certainly noticing already when one child complained that his locker wouldn't open. So the station computer knew how many students there were and stopped opening lockers when the right total had been opened. But Dymac did not turn and demand to know who had opened two lockers. Instead, he pressed his own palm against the last student's locker. It popped open. He closed it again, and now it responded to the student's palm. So they were going to let him have his second locker, his second desk, his second identity. No doubt they would watch him with special interest to see what he did with it. He would have to make a point of fiddling with it now and then, clumsily, so they'd think they knew what he wanted a second identity for. Maybe some kind of prank. or to write down secret thoughts. That would be fun. Sister Carlotta was always prying after his secret thoughts, and no doubt these teachers would too. Whatever he wrote, they'd eat it up. Therefore, they wouldn't be looking for his truly private work, which he would perform on his own desk. Or, if it was risky, on the desk of one of the boys across from him, both of whose passwords he had carefully noticed and memorized. Dymac was lecturing them about protecting their desks at all times, but it was inevitable that kids would be careless and desks would be left lying around. For now, though, Bean would do nothing riskier than what he had already done. The teachers had their own reasons for letting him do it. What mattered is that they not know his own. After all, he didn't know himself. It was like the vent. If he thought of something that might get him some advantage later, he did it. Dymac went on talking about how to submit homework, the directory of teachers' names, and the fantasy game that was on every desk. "You are not to spend study time playing the game," he said. "But when your studies are done, you are permitted a few minutes to explore." Bean understood at once. The teachers wanted the students to play the game and knew that the best way to encourage it was to put strict limits on it and then not enforce them. A game. Sister Carlotta had used games to try to analyze Bean from time to time. So Bean always turned them into the same game. "Try to figure out what Sister Carlotta is trying to learn from the way I play this game." In this case, though, Bean figured that anything he did with the game would tell them things that he didn't want them to know about him. So he would not play at all unless they compelled him. And maybe not even then. It was one thing to joust with Sister Carlotta. Here they no doubt had real experts, and Bean was not going to give them a chance to learn more about him than he knew himself. Dymac took them on the tour, showing them most of what Bean had already seen. The other kids went ape over the game room. Bean did not so much as glance at the vent into which he had climbed, though he did make it a point to fiddle with the game he had watched the bigger boys play, figuring out how the controls worked and verifying that his tactics could in fact be carried out. They did a workout in the gym in which Bean immediately began working on the exercises that he thought he'd need. One-armed push-ups and pull-ups being the most important, though they had to get a stool for him to stand on in order to reach the lowest chinning bar. No problem. Soon enough he'd be able to jump to reach it. With all the food they were giving him, he could build up strength quickly. And they seemed grimly determined to pack food into him at an astonishing rate. After the gym they showered, and then it was supper time. Bean wasn't even hungry yet, and they piled enough food onto his tray to feed his whole crew back in Rotterdam. Bean immediately headed for a couple of the kids who had whined about their small portions, and without even asking permission, scraped his excess onto their trays. When one of them tried to talk to him about it, Bean just put his finger to his lips. In answer, the boy grinned. Bean still ended up with more food than he wanted, but when he turned in his tray, it was scraped clean. The nutritionist would be happy. It remained to be seen if the janitors would report the food Bean left on the floor.